Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the independent republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
It's more like Boris Karloff.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The independent republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It's the start of another week of preening, boasting, lying, eating weird and unusual foods, evictions and chasing the popular vote. But that's enough about the Brexit deal with Brussels and the campaign by Theresa May to get everyone to like her. After the crocodile tears shed by Michel Barnier in Brussels yesterday, I'm not sure I've got any emotions left for the I'm a Remain voter Get Me Out of Here brigade. And after watching the snowflake generation struggling to operate a blowtorch at a demonstration, you know our futures are in the right hands. Today, though, it did start off quite well because British academic Matthew Hedges was pardoned by the UAE. We're told he has now just been released from prison. So it may well be that he'll be back in Blighty by the end of the day, which can't be a bad thing at all. But what on earth was going on there? Why did the Foreign Office allow him to be claimed by the UAE as some kind of an MI6 spy? It all seems a bit ridiculous, doesn't it? 0344 499 1000. Coming up this hour, John Rentoul's going to join us, chief political commentator at The Independent. He's going to try and make sense of why Theresa May, one of the worst campaigners in the history of campaigning, has decided to campaign on behalf of her Brexit deal. Surely if she does that, more people will be against it than there are now. 0344 499 1000. Giselle Wainwright coming up with some bargains for Cyber Monday in this hour as well. And why Sunderland is apparently the best place to live if you're under 30 in the United Kingdom. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, I have to say, if I see any more European leaders or representatives of the European Parliament or representatives, indeed, of any foreign office of any European country telling us how sad a day it was yesterday and how terrible it was yesterday and how awful they all feel about Britain leaving the European Union, I think I might just break down and have somebody pass me a sick bag. However, John Rentoul, the man that knows everything there is to know about the mood of the European nation that we are, will tell us now whether he thinks that Theresa May's ideas are going down better today than they were last week. John, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for that introduction.
Well, indeed. I mean, there's so much to talk about, isn't there, since the day of sort of panto. It's turning into a bit of a pantomime, this whole thing, isn't it? There's a kind of, oh, yes, she will. Oh, no, she won't. You know, I mean, it's kind of mad, isn't
mostly,
it?
It's mostly, oh, no, she won't at the moment, I must say. I think that's overdone. Everybody hates this deal.
Yes,
but it's the deal in the middle of the two options. I mean, the two options are leaving without a deal. Everybody hates that even more. Or the other option is postpone Brexit, hold a referendum, and you know, people like my newspaper, The Independent, hope we'll decide to stay in.
Right.
And you know, there are quite a lot of people who don't like that option either. So the question is, can the middle option, which is currently the most unpopular, just sort of come through by being everybody's second preference?
I can't remember who it was that said, it may have been on Question Time last week, because it all starts to roll, sort of mould into one after a while, but somebody said, it's a bit sort of Churchillian to say that this is the worst possible deal for Brexit, aside from all the rest, which of course is
a very good line.
Which is not a bad line. It kind of is that. It feels like that, doesn't it?
Well, that's my view. I mean, I don't like this idea of being trapped in some arrangement. This guarantee of keeping the Irish border open. I mean, those arrangements, it is unusual to have a country sign up to an international agreement that binds it and doesn't have any means of getting out of it without the other side having a veto over it. I mean, I don't like that at all. But it is the least worst option on the table, I think.
Yes.
And if you want to put an end to free movement, and if you want to keep the Irish border open, it is the only option. So you know that truth is you know may eventually percolate through people's consciousness, but I mean I'm not confident that MPs are going to behave logically.
No, well I mean that is I think probably the truest thing that's been said all day so far. The point is that that here we have now a situation where almost everyone who's anyone in politics is predicting that it will not get through Parliament, which tells me because they've got everything else so badly wrong in this whole Brexit shenanigan that it's almost bound to happen now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they're right. It won't get through on the first attempt because then it won't be clear what the alternatives are.
Right.
So, you know, Theresa May has to get to a point where Parliament is making a choice, a clearly defined choice between two options. And, you know, we don't know what the other option, which option is going to be eliminated first, because there's basically three of them.
Right.
And, you know, if it comes down to a choice between this deal and no deal, then this deal wins. If it comes down to a choice between this deal and a referendum, then I think that's a bit closer. But I still think this deal would probably win that. But I mean, I'm not at all confident about it, as you can tell.
No, indeed. But also, the whole referendum idea also has three possible outcomes, isn't it?
In terms of
what is the referendum going to be about? Is the referendum going to be about whether we stay in the deal that we currently have or make it better? I.e., we've already voted to leave, so let's not have a Remain option on the ballot.
Yeah.
Or do we go back to a simple Remain or Leave? Or do we have the ability to split the Leave vote into two by giving it, you know, I mean, it's so ridiculous that I can't imagine. It's like talking to a lunatic telling you that, you know, the by far and away the best course of action is to set me free from the asylum and everything will be fine.
Yeah, now I mean a three option referendum is really, I mean, that's where it starts to get very difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, how a referendum would actually happen and what the questions would be, and all of that. Those are all very difficult questions, which makes me think that there are difficulties with that course. I mean, that's another reason for thinking that you know, in the end, unpopular though it may seem, Theresa May's deal could prevail.
Yes, and it's only really unpopular with everybody, as opposed to, you know, one side or the other. You know, so in many ways, as I said to you, I think the last time we spoke, you know, it must be doing something right if it's upsetting both sides.
Yes. Yeah. No. Absolutely. It's the worst deal apart from all the others.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And what about the next sort of few days in this campaign of hers? Because Alistair Campbell, who I'm not a massive fan of, put out a very funny tweet this morning saying, "Surely the people's vote people should be very happy this morning to see that Theresa May is going to go out and campaign for something because she's so bad at it."
Well, there is that. I mean, we can all have fun with her at her expense about that. But I mean, on the other hand, I do think over the past week, 10 days, she's sort of held up quite well. And I think she's earning a bit of grudging respect from...
I agree, yeah, totally.
From the general public. I mean, I think, you know, I think she looks like a sincere person who's very determined, who's absolutely trying to do her best in very difficult circumstances. And I think she's getting some respect for that. But I mean, you're right that in the sort of knockabout of a live TV debate with Jeremy Corbyn, who shouldn't really be underestimated in those sort of circumstances, I doubt if she would perform very well. But, you know, if Jeremy Corbyn has got huge problems in all this, because it's not clear whether he wants just to rebrand her deal, put a Labour sticker on it and call it a Jobs First Brexit, or whether he wants to call a halt to the whole thing.
Well,
which
indeed,
most of his party do.
And it is an interesting sort of tightrope to walk, isn't it? Because Keir Starmer's come out and said the Labour Party will be voting against this deal. There are those who are what you might call Democrats, and I'm not sure which side of the fence they fall on, but who basically say, you know, is it not somewhat sort of destructive for MPs not to try and make this thing work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, I mean, what Keir Starmer says is they're going to vote against the deal, but they're not saying what they're going to vote for.
Right.
He's still sort of clinging to this sort of magical alternative deal. But I mean, actually, the Labour Party's policy is very similar to the government's deal. I mean, they want the Labour Party wants a permanent, wants us to be in a permanent customs union. The government wants us to be in a temporary customs union.
Yeah.
And then and none of that's actually going to be decided until after we leave anyway. So there's very little real difference between the government's position and the Labour position. All this is just playing politics, as the Prime Minister quite rightly says. Mm. I think.
And what does it mean for those in the Tory party who would perhaps, if we are to believe what we're being told by their friends, would perhaps even bring the government down and possibly see a Labour government in order to get what they want?
Well, would they?
Well, I mean, you may well
really
ask.
Would they really bring their government down? I mean, that is the interesting question. I mean, what is really astonishing, I thought, was Arlene Foster of the DUP saying that she actually thought a Corbyn government would be better than Theresa May's deal. Now, that really does open up the remarkable prospect of the DUP switching sides in a hung parliament.
Yeah.
And ditching Theresa May and installing Jeremy Corbyn as prime minister. Mm. On condition that he produces a Brexit deal that would be acceptable to the DUP.
Well, he'd have to have a plan then to do that, wouldn't he?
Well, you could see how he could do that. I mean, it would have to be. I mean, he would have to accept free movement because he would have to stay in the single market and in the customs union. I'm not sure either he would lose quite a few Labour MPs in Leave constituencies along the way there, but he might gain enough Tories who are pro EU. So, I mean, that
surely
would
our politics have not become
turnaround.
Surely our politics have not become so cynical that the friend of Sinn Féin and the IRA can actually get into bed with the DUP. Really? Really?
It's just absolutely amazing. That's what Arlene Foster said, though. She actually said that May's deal was a greater threat. She didn't say what to, but a greater threat than a Jeremy Corbyn government.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to remember the DUP did form a government with Sinn Féin.
Yes.
In Northern Ireland.
Well, look what happened to that, though.
I mean, it didn't last. I mean, they did actually do the deal.
They are actually now being run better with no government than they were when they had one. So, I mean, that tells you all you need to know, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, yeah, well, it tells you quite a lot. But I mean, the thing is, the DUP is enjoying its moment in the sun. I mean, you saw that they had their annual conference at the weekend. They were having the time of their lives. I mean, so they're not going to want to go.
She hasn't had this much fun since she handed out all those free boilers to people, I don't think, has she?
Well, that was interesting because her speech, she devoted a large chunk of her speech to a sort of long apology for for that Ash for Cash scandal.
Yes.
But on the other hand, she's still there. You know, there was a lot of talk before the 2017 election that Arlene Foster was finished. She was going to have to go. But of course, the election came along and rescued her because it put the DUP in the balance of power in a hung parliament. They're not going to risk having another general election because then you know the arithmetic may not fall so favourably for them. But while they're in a hung parliament, why not use the threat of putting in Jeremy Corbyn as an alternative prime minister to get whatever they want?
God, it's amazing, isn't it? Because all you've got to do is look across at the SNP and how sort of vacuous and useless they now are compared to where they thought they would be when they had the 56 and they thought that this is going to be the greatest sort of, you know, mess that we can have with the government of all time. And then it's all just evaporated.
Yeah, it has. Although you've got to hand it to Nicola Sturgeon. She's playing a weak hand quite
well. She's doing very well.
She's still quite popular in Scotland, and she, you know, every time anything happens in the news, she pops up and says that makes another referendum on independence more likely.
Right.
but you know, so far it hasn't shifted opinion about independence in Scotland an inch. I mean, the whole Brexit thing was supposed to sort of lead to Scotland becoming independent in the twinkling of an eye.
Yes.
And it hasn't happened.
Right, exactly. And finally, or not quite finally, because I want to talk to you about the Spanish and the whole Gibraltar thing, which seemed to pop up as a big issue, funnily enough, after I started talking about it on Friday, and I started to realise that there was a lot of people who care about Gibraltar, which I never thought possible. But Jeremy Hunt got himself into trouble over the weekend because he coined a new phrase, BOBS, people who are bored of Brexit. Now, he didn't get into trouble because it was a dangerous thing to say, but pedants, and only in this country could you have these people, said it's not actually bored of Brexit, it's bored with Brexit, so it doesn't work.
Well, I'm afraid I'm one of those. I prefer bored with or bored by.
Yes.
But actually, that is just an archaic convention. There's no reason why it shouldn't be bored of.
No.
But you know, the thing is, there are sticklers like me around, and as long as we're around, it makes sense just not to get up our noses.
It's people like you that write these kind of books about grammatical correctness, which should encourage these people, these pedants out there. But anyway, listen, let's finish up on Gibraltar and Spain, because it's not really very clear precisely what Theresa May has said to the Spanish Prime Minister and what has actually passed as a deal of any kind.
No, there wasn't a deal. I mean, she wrote a letter setting out what everybody knows, which is that when it comes to sorting out our final trade deal with the EU, then Spain would have a veto on that. And because although the withdrawal agreement is done by a qualified majority, although in fact in the end they all agreed to that because they want this thing about European unity and they want to hold together, so they pretended that was sort of unanimous. But when it comes to the trade deal, I mean, the legal position is that it has to be signed off by all member states, and not just all member states, but all parts of member states. So the Walloon Parliament in Belgium will get its say, which nearly scuppered the Canadian trade deal.
Right.
So yeah, that is the position, and that's always been the position. And but the Spanish Prime Minister was just engaging a bit of last minute theatricals in order to impress his domestic audience.
No, indeed. And again, sorry to be final about the final question. I mean, people are now asking the question, if this was such a complicated deal and if it took so long to work out, 2 years effectively, why was it that the EU only took a couple of days to sign it off?
Well, that's just the nature of the deal, isn't it? I mean, all the negotiation takes place, you know, behind closed doors, and then it gradually winds its way through the processes. But I mean, you know, Michel Barnier, the negotiator, agreed to it on behalf of the member states because he checked with them that this was acceptable to them. So, yesterday's meeting was just a formality. I mean, they just had, you know, they had agreed in principle, apart from a bit of Spanish showing off, and also I think there's a bit of French showing off as well about fish. But I mean, you know, apart from that, it had all been agreed. So you know, it wasn't that it was sort of easy for them to sign it off at the last minute. No. It had taken 2 years to negotiate, and they finally signed on the dotted line.
Sure, and I mean, from Macron's point of view, he just wanted somebody to take his mind off all the tear gas that was going around Paris, presumably as well.
His opinion poll ratings, which are in the U-bend at the moment.
Now you start to sound like Donald Trump. You know, it must be time to go. John, thank you very much indeed. John Rentoul, Chief Political Commentator of The Independent, telling us how it is, what's likely to happen, when it's likely to happen. And I think, actually, that it is likely to happen, because all of these pundits who say, oh, this is never going to happen, have got it so wrong over the course of time. John's not one of them, by the way, that I think I'm going to go with this is happening. So by Christmas, we will be totally and utterly strapped in, ready for the ejector seat, and ready to hit the push the go button on March the 29th.
More blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 03444991000. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, we will be telling you why Sunderland is apparently the best place to live and work in the United Kingdom. I can't believe that. Surely somebody's got that wrong. And also, what about the Russians and the Ukrainians having a bit of a sort of standoff off the coast of Crimea? Is that something you should be worried about? We'll bring you all the news on that as well. A couple of people have pointed out that the drug in question, the arthritis drug, which is called something unpronounceable like Dalunimibab. I'm not quite sure if that's correct. I'm sure you'll be able to correct me if I'm wrong. Both Craig and Doug say the drug you're referring to has only just lost its patent, so competition to it only just arrived. Would agree with the general point, though, of it being an inefficient and bloated service purely for jobs and pensions. Well, I mean, the NHS does do an awful lot of good, but it's not very efficient. Let's talk to Andy, who's in Bristol. Hello, Andy.
Good morning. Compliments of the season.
Thank you very much indeed. What do you want to tell us?
Two points. I visit my GP quite often. It's okay. A new GP because I've just changed areas.
Right.
And as you rightly said in the interview with the gentleman prior to this, you need to get referred by the GP first, And that's where, in my opinion, that's where the problem starts. It's getting the referral from the GP.
Do you find that it's difficult for them to do that, or they don't want to do it? Do you get a sense they don't want to do it?
Because I'm new, when I'm face-to-face with a GP, they you explain something, and then it's like they don't know your history.
Mm.
Because they need their computers to see what's gone on in your past.
Sure.
And they haven't got time to do it, have they?
No. So I often get the impression as well, Andy, I don't know if you do, that they'll sort of see you the first time and then you say you want a referral and then they kind of tell you to go away, come back. And maybe it takes you three visits before they're convinced enough by your persistence that that's what you actually need.
And it takes weeks to see them.
Yeah.
And the second point is NHS Trust. I had an issue and I went down to my local NHS head office. And you can't see anybody there. And it was impossible to talk to somebody about the issue I had with the NHS service.
Right.
And I brought this up before, a couple of years ago, on local radio. I feel that the position of the person running the local NHS, which should be bigger, it should encompass a huge area, should be run by one man who's responsible for running the whole lot. The accounts, the business, everything.
Yeah.
And that should be an elected post. So after 5 years...
Really? You want to have an election for it? Honestly? Wouldn't that make it even more complicated?
Look, this is a private job.
Right.
This is like anything with a bank. If the chairman of the bank doesn't do the business, the shareholders get rid of him.
Okay.
And on that issue, if he has carte blanche to run his whole area with all the finances... If after 5 years he hasn't done a good job, he can be removed by his publica.
But then what is it that you regard as a good job? Is it a good job financially, steering it so that it doesn't waste money? Is it a good job in terms of the patients being treated, you know, the deaths being prevented? It's difficult to measure, isn't it?
Well, I think a good businessman, like anything, would be able to do this because, yes, that is the business, isn't it?
Well, it is. You're absolutely right. Andy, listen, thank you very much indeed. 0344 499 1000. Andy makes some good points. I'm not sure we want to create yet another tier of elected officials, albeit that they're sort of private individuals and private businessmen. Let's talk to Dr. Thompson, who's called in as well. Dr. Thompson, a very good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well indeed. Thanks for calling. What can you tell us?
My pleasure. Well, basically, I could give you some information. I lost my mother 5 years ago to cancer.
Okay.
And I'm not belittling it, but by the by to the conversation. And she went to an NHS doctor and was misdiagnosed, I believe, twice.
Wow.
Before, when they did find out, it was too late.
Mm. And what was their explanation for that?
They had no explanation.
That's shocking, isn't it?
It's human beings, isn't it? So, you know, it's and I've got to say, she my late stepdad was in the army, and my mum had a health insurance policy, so she was able to go private kind of when they couldn't do much for her, but she was able to. And to be honest, it makes no difference. I saw filth in private hospitals as much as I've seen them in NHS hospitals, so I wouldn't even go down that road that it's an inferior or superior. It is what it is, and what I'm trying to get to is that our doctors, our police, our government are only as good and as valuable as the laws that they are allowed to adhere to.
Mm.
And our laws, Mike, are very antiquated. I'm sure you know this already. A paedophile gets less time in jail than a tax evader. This is the society we live in.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with an awful lot of our society. And I mean, unfortunately, well, or fortunately, you might say, we haven't always got enough time to talk about all of it. We'll get to all of that at some point. But in specifics, though, let's just stick to the NHS this morning.
I can give you more specifics, Mike. It's not a problem. I've got a list of things here. Basically, the NHS problems arrived long before Theresa Mayhem arrived.
Oh, yeah.
It's a fact. Please bear with me. My front door is going.
Sounds like one of those sort of Christmassy front door bells. He wants me to hold on while he gets the front door. I'll tell you what we'll do, Dr. Thompson. We'll come back to you. We'll come back to Dr. Thompson later on because as much as I do want to talk to him, I don't particularly want to wait on hold since I'm the one that's got the radio show and he's the one that's put me on hold. Unbelievable what you get in this place.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
I don't care if it comes round here. I've got more beer in the sideboard here. Let mother sort it out if it comes round here. I'll tell it something else, you know, he's never got a job. He hangs around the betting shop, a lazy little yop. Mother says, calm down.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. 03444991000. We're going to talk pubs in a moment. We're going to go back to the phones as well about the NHS. Rupert has tweeted in at IROMG and at Talk Radio. He said, I had cancer. The first doctor, come back in 6 months if the lump gets bigger. 3 days later, a second doctor, immediate referral to a specialist. Same clinic, same lump, totally different outcome. Difference, the second doctor lost a brother to cancer and so took the lump seriously. Well, that's madness, isn't it? I mean, that is total and utter chaos in a system which is supposed to be at least, at the very least, consistent from one doctor to another, but I'm afraid it's not. Now, we were talking a little bit earlier to Dr. Thompson, who had to unfortunately take a break from the telephone as he went on through his front door. Dr. Thompson, sorry about that. We couldn't really hold on for you, so I thought we'd better to get you back.
Much obliged. Sorry about it.
That's not at all. Was it anything nice that came in the post?
I'm afraid not. Just a brown envelope.
Oh dear, that's no good. All right, listen, we haven't got loads of time, so you were going to tell us what we should do to fix the NHS.
Okay, what I think we should do is legalise medical marijuana, and not just for the cancer aspect, just because the fact that it would solve the NHS financial crisis that they seem to be in at the moment.
Yeah.
Europe seems to have done it. Sorry, Mike, if I may.
Yeah, go on.
May talk. The rest of Europe seems to have done it. America, which is up until 1938 was the most backwards country when it came to legalizing anything, seems to have done it. And they're all getting billions of dollars and euros in tax revenue monthly. So if that's not an example to save even our homeless crisis, we could help with by doing this. But on another level, people don't seem to realize our country grow more medical marijuana than anyone else in Europe. Did you know that? And it's actually on the stock exchange, a company called GW Pharmaceuticals. Yeah. Theresa May's husband is a senior executive, Philip May, of said company. And it's because...
Well, in fact, it's the drugs minister's husband, isn't it, that runs the business?
He runs the business, yes. But Philip May, Theresa's husband, is a senior executive and over $1.5 million dollar shareholder in the company. So he's got a lot involved in it, so to speak. I'm just using this as a small example of if people think, well, why hasn't this done been already? Yeah. Well, you cannot patent a plant. And it's like you were saying earlier about that new drug, Amabili, whatever it's called.
Yes.
It's the same. Once another company finds they can sell a version of it cheaper, The hospitals will always go for the cheaper version because it's financially...
Well, let's hope they should always go for the cheaper version. I'm not sure that's entirely true, Doctor. But listen, we'll come back to you as well because there's loads for us to discuss and many, many times that we're going to have an opportunity to do so. We'll throw that one out as well. The whole medical marijuana debate rages on because they have supposedly legalised medical marijuana, but they haven't really done it properly. That is part of the problem as well. 03444991000 is the number if you want to join in the debate. Let's go now, though, to David Wilson, who is a man who knows a little bit about the British Beer and Pub Association because he is the Public Affairs Director. David, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thanks very much. We're going to move away from the possibility of medical marijuana creating a good thing for the NHS, and let's talk instead about the number of pubs that are closing down in this country because it seems there's a figure come out just recently that two pubs in Britain have closed for every new cafe opening up in the last 5 years, which is staggering, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a challenge for us. We're losing three pubs a day in the UK are closing their doors for good. And we know that that's something that the British people feel very strongly about. We launched a campaign in the summer called Long Live the Local, which is designed to get people behind a campaign to cut the tax on beer and reduce some of the tax pressures on pubs to help pubs compete with what is a very competitive high street at the moment.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, what chance have you got of getting the Exchequer, though, to reduce a tax on something which they rather rely on for quite a lot of money, don't they?
No, we do. I mean, beer drinkers do pay a lot in tax, as you say. A pound in every £3 that's spent in a pub goes straight to the tax man. But to be fair to Philip Hammond, he did freeze beer duty. He did listen to those consumers that contacted him before the budget and froze it in the last budget, because he listened to the arguments that said that, you know, you can't carry on taxing this industry. We are very overtaxed as brewers and pub owners.
Yeah, and as people, actually, to be honest.
Yeah. No, well, obviously, it's reflected in how much you pay for your pint. So yeah. We do get some help from the Chancellor, but there's always more that the government could be doing to help pubs.
Right. And what about the kind of pubs that are shutting? Are they sort of all different types, or do they tend to be the ones in the countryside? Do they tend to be ones in cities? How does that break down?
It's a bit of a mixture, to be honest, Mike. It tends to be the ones where they have struggled to find a food offer in a country where our expectations for pubs to provide a higher quality food offer are much greater. Yeah. We serve now 1 billion meals a year in pubs,
right.
And many pubs are open for breakfast. Many pubs offer a really good coffee offer to compete with some of those coffee shops that you've mentioned. So the ones that are closing, I think, are finding it more difficult to compete because they're not able, for various reasons, to offer the range of services or the occasional atmosphere that needs to be provided for consumers these days. But obviously, it's not all doom and gloom. We all still love to go to our local pub. We all love to go out and watch sport in our local pub when we're not talking about it and listening to the radio. Mike, we're out there watching. The World Cup was great for pubs this summer because it's a great place for people to go and watch the big sporting occasions. If they can't get tickets for the game itself, there's no better place than to be in a pub with your mates to watch a match. So there's still a huge amount of positivity around pubs, but we do face some significant challenges.
No, of course,
as you've pointed out.
And what about the idea that sort of too much diversification maybe has hurt the pub industry in the sense that, you know, you can't really compete with a coffee shop, and maybe you shouldn't be trying to. You can't necessarily compete with a restaurant, so maybe you shouldn't be trying to. Do you know what I mean? It's like, has the pub lost the great British pub, has it lost its identity slightly?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I don't think so. I think what you'll find is that there is a pub for all types of people and there's a pub for all types of occasion. Some of us prefer the sort of more traditional pubs where it's quieter, there's no music, and there's a great range of beers and there may be a limited food offer. Others prefer to go out with the families for a meal and therefore they'd go to a pub that had a broader food offer. And the good thing is, you know, we've still got nearly 50,000 pubs in the country. It's a fairly uniquely British thing and the British people still love their pubs. I think, you know, people are drinking differently. Young people are drinking less. They're not going to the pub as a default anymore. That younger generation, my children's generation, aren't doing that. But so there's a challenge for pubs to provide the kinds of occasions, whether it's quiz nights or darts tournaments or different kinds of activities that are going to attract people to the pub, get them out of their homes, which have become more comfortable, and into a pub for those experiences that you can only really get in a pub. You won't get those experiences in a coffee shop.
Well, here's an experience you won't like to hear, and this is from Bob. He says, I bought a round of 6 drinks at a pub in Windsor and it cost £39. I've lost all sympathy for pubs. My local charges nearly a tenner for 2 drinks, and even after overheads, how can supermarkets off licenses sell so cheap when the pubs can't? Well, I guess you're going to tell me that's down to tax, aren't you?
It's partly down to tax. It's also, inevitably, if you keep a good cellar and you train your staff and you have a decent number of staff to serve that beer, then those are costs involved that you don't have if you're running a supermarket to sell beer or other drinks in the supermarket aisle. So, and it's a different experience. You know, we want people to enjoy beer wherever they choose to, but pubs have got to compete with people's... you know, people have got less money in their pockets, so they will be looking for value where they can find it.
Sure. I mean, I must admit, it does surprise me. I'm seeing a line here in Christchurch in Dorset. Planning permission for a new cafe was recently refused on the grounds that there are already 14 on a stretch of just 500 yards. I mean, I'm amazed that so many cafes can succeed.
Well, I think it's because we're working in a different way. We're living longer, so there's more of us who are retired, and we've got time, free time on our hands with disposable income. Our lifestyles have changed. I won't say we've become that cafe society, but we certainly do spend a lot more of our leisure time in the high streets or in shopping centres, and there is time when there's only a limited amount of time that you can actually do shopping. But those of us who don't particularly enjoy shopping, actually stopping off for a beer or for a cup of coffee is a bit of a rest respite. So I can see why high streets coffee shops are doing well, but they only offer a partial experience. And all I'm saying is that, you know, there are many of us who love the pub because it offers a different experience that you won't get anywhere else. It's a fairly unique experience,
sure,
of enjoyment, and fresh beer served in on draft in a pub. For me, you know, you can't beat that. You can't rival that. So a lot of people choose that as a leisure option.
Sure. David, thanks very much indeed. David Wilson there from the British Beer and Pub Association. Have you stopped going to the pub because it's become so expensive, or just because it's not the kind of place you want to go? I don't think the pub system has ever actually recovered from the banning of smoking, because the whole point of a pub was that you went there to smoke, and loads of people now don't bother because they can't smoke in there, so they just don't go.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Oh, 03444991000. We need to get out of Brexit and the whole debate just so we don't have to play music like that, it would seem to me. But of course, you're listening to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. This is Talk Radio. Jerry says a lot of local pubs are shutting down due to the brewery companies who own the pubs charging an absolute fortune. Sky, BT, etc. charge local pubs the same cost for football as they do a pub in a city centre, which is an absolute disgrace. And David says, I don't think you can beat the experience of drinking in a proper pub. I go most days, but I also agree that the smoking ban was one of the main reasons for the decline. A lot of people saying that the pub business has gone out of business because of the way that they have, in fact, changed. In fact, Bob says, it would be nice to find a pub with no food, no TV and no kids. Head to Scotland would be my advice. 03444991000. Let's talk to Ricky, who happens to be in Glasgow. Hello, Ricky.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
I'm all right, sir. How are the pubs in Glasgow? We were just talking about Glasgow a minute ago, and I have very fond memories of the place, you know.
Of course you have. Everyone does. It's a great city.
It is.
Apart from the other vendors and the alcohol dealers, they've more or less brought his knees right enough.
Well, I mean, you've now got minimum pricing in Scotland, haven't you?
No, I don't agree with that.
Why?
I don't agree with that. That's an economic term. That's prohibition based on...
Only for the jakeys, though.
Only for the people that can't afford it.
The jakeys.
Wait a minute. Hold a second. You've been asking this for me coming on.
All right, then. Hurry up.
No. First of all, I don't agree with admiration for these alcohol dealers and your elbow benders. That's the first thing.
Right. They
close all the pub downs. That's the second thing. Let's move on.
Where are you going to get all the revenue from, Ricky, to run everything else?
Well, look what we'll save with women not getting a sore face behind closed doors and having to attend the National Health Service and put our money on there.
Well, I don't know about that.
Let's not talk the truth. I mean, let's say talk about the National Health Service on a Friday or Saturday night. Eh?
Well, listen, Ricky, not everybody that drinks turns violent. Let me put it to you that way.
Well, I can't agree with you. What about those who get drunk, stagger out, spew with a beautiful dress, and don't even think of go back into the pub and saying, excuse me, your product made me sick. Could I have my money back, please?
Alcohol
industry is making a complete fool of the parties that have attended. And
yeah,
that's British pub. No, sorry, Mike, interrupted you. It's your show. Sorry, carry on.
No, what I was going to say to you, Ricky, is it's all very well saying you make it illegal, which is never going to happen.
Yeah, it's prohibition.
Which is never going to happen.
It'll have to happen.
But the reason it won't happen, for the same reason they won't ban smoking, is because, actually, it makes an awful lot of money for the government. And they need, you know, they're like a very thirsty animal. They need the money. They can't do without it. They're addicted to money. And without the taxpayer...
That's honest. I agree with you there.
Yeah, and without the taxpayer... Without the tax that they collect, they don't have any money. They can't generate any money, so therefore they need the money to collect. And if you make all these things illegal...
I agree with you, but, I mean, the government is not going to come around and say, we're living off the backs of the alcoholic and the drunks.
They're not. But that's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's where the money's coming from, you're saying.
Yeah, that's where a lot of it's coming from, yeah. I mean, they collect more money in taxes from cigarettes than they ever spend on the amount of people who need lung cancer treatment from the NHS. Way more, billions
is that
more.
Something to brag about.
Well,
I've listened to the middle-aged men and they're sitting in the pub and they're talking an absolute load of rubbish.
Well, you know, going to pubs, Ricky, you told me.
Oh, I go in and play music and watch it. It's pathetic.
Really? What a strange man you are. You must have a very odd life, Ricky. Listen, we'll talk again soon because we're out of time. Just for this moment, 0344 499 1000. Ricky thinks we should ban alcohol altogether and do away with it. Well, it might cause a few problems for a few people, but I suppose we could do without it. Or you just move to Saudi Arabia if you don't want to deal with any of that.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, the next conversation we're about to have is going to be even more unbelievable than the last one because, believe it or not, somebody has said that the best place to live if you're under 30 is Sunderland. And not only is it the best place to live in this country, but it's also the best place to work. Now, I don't know anyone who likes Sunderland. I don't know anyone who's been there that says it's anything other than a completely awful, ghastly place. And I'm talking about people who studied there, right? Now, we tried to find somebody from Sunderland to actually defend it, but all we could find was Andy Dawson, podcaster and TalkSport presenter, who's, of course, from nearby Middlesbrough. Andy, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Hi, Mike. I'm from Sunderland, actually.
Oh, I thought you were from Middlesbrough.
No.
Right. So what's great about Sunderland?
When was the last time you were in Sunderland, Mike?
I've never been there.
Right. So you've just said that it's a dump, but you've never been.
Yeah, because everyone I know who's ever been there says it's a dump, and that's why I've never been.
Right. Okay.
I presume it's famous for its sense of humour, Andy.
Oh, you know what? I can't be bothered with this.
You can't be bothered with what? Oh, dear. Andy Dawson has hung up the phone, thereby proving that Sunderland is a very unwelcoming part of the world. That is quite extraordinary. Poor old Andy, I wonder why he doesn't like talking about Sunderland. Maybe somebody could help us out. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Apparently, if you want to upset anyone from Sunderland, what you do is you say that they're from Middlesbrough. But actually, it's all part of the joke, really, isn't it? How very interesting. How very, very interesting. Andy Dawson, right, he says on his Twitter, going on Talk Radio in about 15 minutes to talk about why my home city is a magnet for millennials. And he then has the story, which says that Sunderland is named as the best place for under 30s to live and work, and a three-bedroom home can be snapped up for £150,000. Can somebody from Sunderland tell me why you should live there? For heaven's sake, without putting the phone down.
More blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000. Of course, if you are listening to Talk Radio online, did you know that you can also listen on DAB digital radio? Radio is growing, and more people than ever across the UK can now receive DAB radio stations, with new transmission areas being added all the time. So press the auto tune or auto scan button on your DAB digital radio now to make sure you don't miss out. For more details, go to talkradio.co.uk/retune. You can, of course, always listen via the app on your phone and also through talkradio.co.uk. A couple of quick tweets before we go back to the phones. And you know the number, of course, 0344 499 1000. Here's one from Ross about the business at University of Sheffield and real education. Great points, he says. As an academic myself, says Ross, I have at various times been told by the university hierarchy not to use examinations as assessment, as students don't like them. Instead, I've been asked to set assignments and group assessment. And I've also known university managers virtually place a gun to lecturers' heads by instructing them to return absurdly high grades and pass rates. And I think part of the problem with all that is, of course, that universities like schools now, with their Ofsted marks of one or two or whatever it is that they get awarded, you know, if they get too low an award and too many of the students say they don't like going there, then they'll lose money. That's part of the problem. 0344 499 1000. We were talking earlier about Sunderland and why it's been named as the best place to live if you're under 30, the best place to work, cheapest place to buy a house. Andy Dawson doesn't agree. He's from Sunderland, but he couldn't seem to come up with any reasons why you would want to live there. Let's talk to Pablo, who's in Newcastle. Hello, Pablo.
How do, Mike? How are you doing?
Very well indeed, mate. Very nice to hear from you. Lovely part of the world, Newcastle. I've never been to Sunderland, so I can't say what it's like. But tell us why everyone up there is so kind of, you know, upset with each other.
Well, I mean, the whole kind of Newcastle, Sunderland, Middlesbrough rhetoric type of thing. You know, yeah. your smoggies, your Macams and your Scabby Mags and all that.
Now, the Macams and all that, for people who don't know, that was all about sort of calling people who made the ships Macams, right? And that was where they made them.
Yeah, it was Macam and Tackam.
Right.
But obviously we already had Geordie, so Tackam didn't really take on.
Right. And where does Geordie come from?
It's split, but I believe the official understanding is that it's from King George's men when Scotland and England had issues. The people of Newcastle sided with King George against the Scottish, so it became Georgies, which later became Geordies.
Oh, okay, all right. So I mean, it's a relatively small area, isn't it, in terms of geography, Middlesbrough, Sunderland, and Newcastle, but very fiercely sort of, I guess, nationalistic in their own place.
Well, yeah, well, I think most of that's down to football, to be honest with you. I think if you take football out of the equation and the kind of fans surrounding it,
right,
generally people in the North East get on quite well. The whole kind of, you know, going on about Sunderland being bad or Newcastle being bad, it's generally specifically football-related.
Mm.
And it's a very, very, you know, staunch old kind of derby thing up here. You know, I'm in the minority. I don't really support football.
Okay.
I'm not really that interested in it. But
that is unusual for a guy from Newcastle, because I mean, certainly when I've been up there with the Too Much. We did a show at the old Opera House there, and we stayed in the hotel right next to St James Park with the Shark Bar in it. Right, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was very much. I mean, the whole kind of theme of Newcastle as a city seems to be about the football club.
Well, it is, and I think personally, I think that's a bit of a shame, because, you know, essentially, if you tie your stock too much within a football team, I mean, just look at Sunderland where they are now. I mean, you can't really, you know, call Sunderland AFC the pride of Sunderland when it's languishing in the doldrums of whatever division.
Well, no,
and
indeed.
If that's all you're hanging your hat on, then, like I say, you know, it just takes one bad season and all of a sudden it's a punchline rather than something to be proud of.
Well, that was kind of why I was hoping that Andy Dawson might be able to tell me what was great about Sunderland, because it has been named as a great place to be and a great place to work and a great place to live. But instead of that, he decided to take umbrage about the fact that I suggested he might be from Middlesbrough.
Well, you see, and I know Andy Dawson is a big football fan himself, so that might have been a part of...
That might explain it. So he can't separate his... He's maybe just depressed because Sunderland is so awful.
Oh, yeah, well, it's a jerky type of reaction that people have. As soon as you mention Sunderland, even locally around here, people straight away say, oh, Macams, oh, it must be from Sunderland, oh, that, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it's just a jerky reaction from football. It's kind of indoctrinated within people from quite a young age. But Sunderland's grand. I mean, it's... obviously, Lewis Carroll did Alice in Wonderland.
He wrote it in Sunderland?
Well, no, I mean, this whole kind of cliche that's hackneyed about that he came up with it on a boat, like on a boat with some kids in London somewhere.
Right.
Apparently, that's all Tish and Fipsy. It's basically his sister used to live in Sunderland. She was married to a priest or a vicar or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And he would come up regularly to visit his nieces. And there's a brilliant book by Brian Talbot called Alice in Sunderland.
Oh, really?
It's a comic. It's like a graphic novel. But what it does is just full of facts and information about Sunderland and the North East. And you can actually tie some of the kind of geographical descriptions in Alice in Wonderland. You can actually tie it to specific places in Sunderland.
Right.
And there's a park in the city of Sunderland which has got like lots of, you know, references to it, and it's a nice little walk near the glass house, which is like winter gardens.
Yeah.
You know,
now, I mean, the thing that does surprise me, though, is it tells us that, you know, it's a great place to go and work. Now, if you want to attract the millennials up to Sunderland, I'm not sure what they're going to do. I mean, it's got a big car factory, but I'm not sure what else it's got, really.
Well, it's close to Newcastle, I suppose.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I mean, part of with this story, all it really is that, you know, the base story behind it is the fact that it's been criminally underfunded and had very little income put into it from the government over the years. And, I mean, it only got city status in, like, 1991
right.
or thereabouts, I think.
OK.
And, obviously, you've got the car factory, but, obviously, with the whole kind of Brexit shenanigans, I won't go into that.
Well, they're not sure, really, are they, whether they're going to stay or not, are they?
Exactly, and if that goes, that is literally the biggest employer in Sunderland. So,
right.
But I'd say, ultimately, this whole kind of story of, oh, it's the best place to live, is basically because it's been so criminally underfunded over the years that it's just really cheap to live there because of that. So it's kind
Well, I'm looking at a house which has been put out there by hunters.com, the estate agents. Park Parade, overlooking Roker Park, four-bedroom house, close to the seafront, extended and improved, but the house retains many original features. Looks like a lovely old sort of Victorian terraced house. 320,000. I mean, if that was in London, it'd be probably about 1.5 million.
Oh, well, that's it. And that's the thing. And hopefully, you know, it'll kind of have a kind of reverse effect because of the, you know, problems with not any investment in the area. Hopefully it will attract people, which will in turn kind of like bolster it back up the other way.
So maybe we should come and do a show from Sunderland. What do you think?
Well, you might have a few people who agree with your viewpoints up there. I'll leave it at that.
Listen, it's not my viewpoint. All I'm telling you is that everyone I've ever spoken to who's ever been there says it's horrible. You know, it's not my fault.
It could definitely be improved upon, but like I say, I think, you know, we in the North East are often kind of forgotten about in general, whether it's, you know, to do with budgets or to do with touring people or whatever. Often they'll go to Manchester and then skip straight to Scotland. So,
but everybody talks about Newcastle as being a great party town. Everybody says Newcastle's full of people with a great sense of humour. You know, you have a great night out in Newcastle. Anyone who is anyone will tell you that. And I can attest to that because I have been there and it's been great. But I mean, I know people who went to university in Sunderland and they said it was awful.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it could definitely do with a little bit. But, you know, I suppose they've always got Weir Side Jack.
Weir Side Jack, there you go. You see, it's taken Pablo from Newcastle to actually big up Sunderland. You've done a better job than Andy Dawson, who's from Sunderland.
Well, you see, I've taken the football out of the equation. I can do these things with a clear, measured head.
Yes, no, absolutely right. Listen, Pablo, thank you very much indeed for your thoughts. Pablo there, bigging up Sunderland, even though he's not actually from Sunderland, showing that, in fact, you can be magnanimous about these things. You don't have to have hatred in your heart just because you're not from Middlesbrough or Sunderland or Newcastle. It's a bit like hating somebody from Essex while you come from London.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff, like research and testing to create shoes from natural materials, like leather made from plants, eucalyptus tree fiber, and sugarcane. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at allbirds.com today. That's allbirds.com.